Now, do one about the end of polygamy and why the LDS Church ended it. Okay, sure. In 1843, Joseph Smith published his Doctrines and Covenants 132, claiming that he has received a revelation from the Lord that plural marriage is sanctionable, citing multiple prophets such as Abraham having multiple wives. He also writes that his wife Emma is supposed to cleave onto him, and him only. So after this, polygamy becomes an open practice in the church, whereas Joseph Smith was already practicing it well before he wrote this. Joseph Smith is killed in 1844, the church moves to Utah under the leadership of Brigham Young, and polygamy continues to be practiced. In 1862, Congress passes the Anti-Bigamy Act, which is meant to criminalize polygamy and also limit real estate holdings of the church in the territory of Utah. It doesn't really do a whole lot, but Brigham Young pretends to comply with it. In 1874, the Poland Act is passed, which is also further criminalizing polygamy. In 1879, in Reynolds versus the United States, again, the Supreme Court affirms that polygamy is unconstitutional and you cannot use a religious exemption to allow yourself to continue practicing it. Brigham Young dies in 1877. His successor is John Taylor, who becomes president of the church in 1880, and he continues the practice of polygamy. In 1882, Congress passes the Edmonds Act, making polygamy a felony offense. And later on, in 1886, John Taylor claims to have received a revelation affirming the practice of plural marriage. This revelation would later be denied by the church as being a false or forged document. In 1887, Congress passes the Edmonds-Tucker Act, which allows for more punitive measures against Mormons for practicing polygamy, such as disincorporating the religion, disbanding the perpetual immigration fund, seizing property of the church, replacing local judges, as well as, in many cases, incarcerating multiple people who are practicing polygamy. The Edmonds and Edmonds-Tucker Act essentially forces Mormon leadership to go underground, with John Taylor spending his last 2.5 years as church president, essentially preaching in exile. After his death in 1887, he is succeeded by Wilford Woodruff, who is allowed to be seen in public. However, his main concerns are settling these legal disputes to prevent more Mormons from being incarcerated, but also to find a way for Utah to seek statehood in the Union. Utah was a territory, therefore it was under federal jurisdiction and control. That's how you get things like the Edmonds-Tucker Act passed, where you can actively seize property from the church and limit how much property they can own. However, if Utah were to become a state, it would become more autonomous. It would have more localized control, which would serve the interests of the church. So Woodruff is trying to find a way to achieve Utah statehood. However, he can't succeed at that if they continue the practice of polygamy. In 1889, Woodruff starts denying any requests for plural marriages. In 1890, he publishes a manifesto claiming, after conferring with God, that the church cannot continue the practice of plural marriage. The 1890 Manifesto is a major turning point for the Mormon Church, and it does succeed. In 1895, Congress allows the people of Utah to draft their own state constitution, and Utah becomes a state in 1896. However, between 1890 and 1904, there are still about 200 plural marriages performed, largely in secret, some in Mexico and in Canada, as well as some in the United States itself. In 1903, the Utah legislature elects Mormon Apostle Reed Smoot to the U.S. Senate. Now, because Smoot is a member of the governing body of the LDS Church, he is considered by many to be a polygamist, or at least a supporter of polygamy, which ignites controversy, which leads on to the congressional hearings known as the Smoot hearings. Joseph F. Smith, the current president of the LDS Church, the nephew of Joseph Smith, and also a practicing polygamist himself, later publishes a second manifesto, claiming that anyone who practices plural marriage will be excommunicated from the church. The attempts to unseat Smoot are unsuccessful, and he serves as a senator for 30 years. He's most famously known for the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930, a series of protectionist policies and tariffs passed by the U.S. that plunged it greater into the Great Depression. It also ultimately collapsed global trade, as multiple other countries also enacted tariffs in response. So some historians, like Sarah Payne, for instance, believe that the reason why Japan turned against the United States was because it lost strong economic ties with us following the passage of the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. So essentially, the attack on Pearl Harbor might have been because of people like Reed Smoot. That's the crazy thing about history, because it's all interconnected. If Reed Smoot isn't elected to the Senate, or if he's removed from the Senate, do we get the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act? Does it pass in Congress? Do we get the attack on Pearl Harbor? Do events like 9/11 occur, or the wars in Afghanistan or Iraq? Anyways, in 1896, Utah is granted statehood under the stipulation that they explicitly banned polygamy in their state constitution. Joseph F. Smith's 1904's Second Manifesto also calls for the excommunication of any member practicing polygamy, the most famous example being Richard Lyman, an apostle of the First Presidency, who was found cohabitating with someone other than his wife in 1943. Even then, however, there are multiple offshoots of the LDS Church that continue practicing polygamy to this day, the most famous example being the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints Church that is led by Warren Jeffs. In 2011, Warren Jeffs was convicted of multiple sex crimes and he's currently serving a prison sentence. However, he still maintains his church via Zoom calls. They still openly practice polygamy to this day.